Hi, welcome back to AR Zone. I'm your host, Carolyn Bale. These continuing interviews on intersectional veganism and related issues are in association with VegFest UK. In today's interview, Roger and I are pleased to welcome Claire Mann as our special guest. Claire is an Australian-based vegan psychologist, communications trainer, and animal advocate. She consults with people around the world to help address the personal and social challenges of living vegan in a non-vegan world, and has recently released a book called Vistopia, The Anguish of Being Vegan in a Non-Vegan World. Claire also runs training programs in communication, team building, and ethical leadership. Claire will be speaking at VegFest UK London this year and joins us today to give us a preview of her talk there as well as an insight into her work. Welcome to AR Zone, Claire.
Thank you. Wonderful to be calling in from Australia and on my way to England very soon.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Claire, as I mentioned, you'll be speaking at VegFest this year and I assume you'll be covering the issues of Vistopia. Would you please explain to our listeners how the concept came about and why it's so important to you?
Yes, well, I've been studying vegans for the last 10 years. I became vegan 10 years, although I, in fact, gave up meat 40 years ago. Like most people, we wish we'd asked more questions. And over the last 10 years, I've got involved very much with animal rights campaigning. And so a lot of people started to come to me as a psychologist and saying, how do we live with the burden of knowing? And so through that process, I started to formalize my research a little bit. And over 10 years, I've been doing interviews with vegans around the world, but also did quite a large survey of 850 vegans, asking them what they were struggling with. And it seemed to me, as was very much the case with my own life, that it was the sort of depression and anxiety and grief and horror of knowing what happens to animals behind closed doors. It was not a pathological situation. It was a normal and desirable response to seeing the suffering of these animals. But that's not necessarily the case for doctors who are sending people to me they believe have eating disorders, social adjustment disorders, and self-harming because they're watching this. So Vistopia was the book and the term was something I created to avoid pathologizing by the medical profession, who will then rush very quickly to produce a drug to stamp out compassion within us. And so Vistopia, I hope, is a word, a concept that helps people crystallize very quickly the enormity of the raising of the veil, so to speak, and realizing the world you believed used to exist and no longer exists when you find out about animal cruelty.
Thanks, Claire. I'd like to address a little bit of the criticism that I've heard in regard to Vistopia. How do you apply your concept to people who may have lived with trauma and oppression for much of their lives prior to becoming vegan? I'm thinking particularly of, say, women of colour and trans women, for example, who may have sustained centuries of systemic violence and erasure. Would they also be just as traumatised by what happens to other animals? For example, one of the criticisms I've heard suggests that you may be implying that a person hasn't lived with anguish or oppression until they've become vegan.
Oh, that's certainly not the case. Having been a psychologist for over 30 years, I'm in awe of people sometimes how they're standing up, some of the traumas they go through and abuses. And it seems that some people break down and some people break through. And I don't think any of us get away with not having to live a life. We can't cure people of life. And so there are enormous anguishes that happen through loss and grief and prejudice and racism and sexism and sexual abuse and all sorts of things. In fact, I worked in homicide for a year in Sydney when I first came here, working with people whose families had been murdered and trying to overcome those deep traumas. So definitely not. But I felt it was so ubiquitous what was happening to animals and people's engagement with them in the non-vegan world, through eating and what they wear and the products they put on their faces and clean their homes with, then I think it warranted a special term because people cannot not be part of the system of abuse. Even if they disagree with it, they can't not be until they make actual steps to do something about it. Because unless we change our diet, unless we find out very clearly what is going into the production of our clothes or other products we use, we can bet our bottom dollar that they will be used on animals. And so I think it warranted a special term. And perhaps I can give you a definition. Is Vistopia is the anguish of the knowing about the systematized cruelty to animals and then the trance-like collusion with a world that says there's nothing wrong here. But then there's another step, because the vegan says, well, if I didn't know about that, what else don't I know about? Now, people who have suffered other traumas and deep prejudices, of course they feel a deep anguish about those experiences and the trance-like collusion of the world that says there's not a problem. Where are you saying about this systemic prejudice here? And then they ask more questions, perhaps they reverse back to animals or to environment or other things. So I just feel this is a term for related to the systematized cruelty towards animals. It certainly does not undermine or say that it's the first trauma that occurs.
Thanks for that, Claire. Do you think it's important to bring into context the overlapping of all oppressions within the animal advocacy movement? And if so, how do you go about doing this in your own work?
Well, absolutely. I'm always very saddened when I come across vegans that dislike people or they feel there's, you know, preferential treatment should be given to animals. Mm-hmm. I think when we start to look at animal issues from the perspective of speciesism, we start to put it to a level where we can start to say, this is all oppression. This is all superiority. And when we become superior, usually as human beings, and even within that, as we know, we start to afford people that don't fit into our group with treatment that is not acceptable. And so I think it's very helpful and necessary for us to take an intersectional view to look at all oppression so that we can, you know, create a better world, really. Encouraging people to look at those issues, particularly when they're steeped in dystopia, can be very challenging. And it's certainly part of my task is to make people more compassionate towards each other and the different sort of experiences within being human.
Absolutely. I think sometimes we forget that as animal advocates that the advocacy movement is kind of made up 100% of humans. So if we're going to be perpetuating racism or misogyny, for example, we're turning away the very people who make up the animal movement. I mean, other animals obviously have very, very strong voices, and a lot of us choose not to listen to them, but they certainly have very strong voices. But in terms of advocacy and actions, it's the movement is made up of humans. So the worst thing we can possibly do is turn away the people who are the movement.
You're absolutely right. And everybody has a different perspective to offer. And we're struggling with this thing called being, you know, on this planet in our physical form. I was recently speaking at World Vegan Day, a very large event in Melbourne, Australia. And I started to look at some of the science coming out from Princeton University, which is looking at sort of empirical studies that show that the power of intention in groups when we come together is being sort of seen to make changes in physical reality. Now, that's been the domain, of course, of sort of more new age thinking, so to speak, things like, which I've wholeheartedly embraced, but things like the secret and the law of attraction, something that's been in every philosophy, religion and teaching since millennia. But when we know people want science, we seem to be in that era at the moment when science is the arbiter of all truth. When we start to look at those studies, and I was getting people to embrace that, is when we come together as individuals but in groups and we hold a strong intention and we're congruent in our heart, head, mind and spirit, we can start to make real changes in the outer world. So connecting with people who have had different experiences of oppression, they have a story to bring and to enrich this movement, I think, to end all oppression.
Yeah, absolutely. Claire, from a psychological perspective, how would you suggest that both vegans and non-vegans avoid being traumatized by having graphic footage thrust upon them with events such as the Cubes of Truth, where little or no consent to watch violent footage is sought?
You know, this is a really hard one, isn't it? Because you know, real vegans, I believe, happen when we empathise with the suffering of the other, of the animals. And how do we make that connection, help people make that connection and be sort of shocked by this, to see the extent of it if we don't show them information? And I think that's very difficult. I think, obviously, if we're in one-to-one situations, we're about to show a footage on Facebook or something, we need to warn people, so to speak, so they have a choice. I myself was at a Cube of Truth yesterday, and they're very powerful things because some people will not look. They'll glimpse and then they'll walk past. But I think getting people to see graphic image is essential in many ways if they're going to become, let's call them ethical vegans, i.e. ones that are, you know, it's not perhaps very tricky ground when we start sort of separating these groups, I know, but it's not a plant-based diet for them. They're actually wanting to be part of the solution to end this sort of oppression. And I think the Cuba Truth is very powerful, because if you and I were to sit down together and you say, hey, Claire, look at this awful footage happening in a factory farm, and I don't know you, I'm a member of the public, or even I do know you, but this is a very intimate thing because I'm going to experience some very powerful emotions in relation to you. There's this sort of, the dynamic starts to happen that not only am I traumatized by what I see, which I believe the vast majority are, I then have to face you, who I know has a position on it and could judge me, and then I'm self-conscious about feeling this in front of you because we might not be close enough. What I think the Cuba Truth does, it's in a public place. We don't sort of corral people in. They can walk past. People are wearing masks. And I think that's powerful. And I see people come up and see things, and they are forced, if only for a few seconds, to experience their own emotions in relation to the material. And I think that's very powerful. If I hadn't experienced it regularly on the Cuba Truth, I think I would tend to say, well, the change could be very short, not permanent in any way. I'm absolutely amazed at the positive responses where people say, well, why don't we know? And tell me more. So do we sort of, how can we make this reality pretty? It's very difficult, but I do think as much as possible, we need to be kind to people. We're not there to shock them into doing something out of guilt. This is why I think we partner with people and we use words like we have all been duped. You know, we should be angry about this because all of us have had, you know, the veil sort of pulled over our eyes.
Yeah, I agree with you when you said this is a difficult one. I think it's a difficult one too. I won't watch graphic footage, but I'm not the type of person who needs to watch graphic footage. I guess what I was getting at with that question is that you're treating people for dystopia because they've been made aware of the graphic nature of the animal agricultural industry. But at the same time, these events that you're obviously supporting are responsible for traumatizing people. And I understand what you're saying, that a lot of people have said that they've changed, they've become vegan and they've had their eyes opened by these events. But I think there's two sides to it, and I worry that people are being unnecessarily traumatized and they're being shown this footage without consent, and I don't know what sort of effect that has on them, particularly on children too.
Well, there's an interesting one. One thing I would like to say, it's not the events that are traumatizing them, it's the knowledge that goes on behind the scenes that we're revealing, of course. I think you've got a really good point there, and it's a very tricky one because you're trying to talk to people, as we know, about not just this issue but many other issues, and there, you know, there's this willful ignorance, there's the psychic defences that happen, and we're trying to break the trance for a moment, really, in all issues around oppression, to try and get people to see what's really going on, when they go along with, well, there's nothing really happen, the government would never allow this. So how do we do that through dialogue? Because if we are just sharing the information, it often stays at an intellectual level. And there needs to be an emotional response. And I think a lot of animal protection groups do this very well, where they, you know, present information, give a person the opportunity to watch a video. Animals Australia, where I'm here at the moment, do this very well. But they immediately have to give something that someone can do. We need to transmute that very quickly into positive action, or else it will become depression. Literally, they'll depress it or be traumatized and unable to move on. And I think that's where the responsibility of any cube setting up needs to take people through the training, the vegans they're advocating, through an induction process, so they can immediately come alongside the person and say, have you seen this before? And have literature there, have information, have support. I think just to show people, to traumatize them, I think that would be really irresponsible. But it is tricky. You know, having talked to vegans for so many years, I know you have, of course, they come to this through very different means. Sometimes they look at their cat and they say, oh my gosh, there's a real person in there. I didn't realize. And if I'm not eating my cat, why should I eat something else? And they've never heard the word veganism. I have so many stories of this, and I think that's part of the collective conscious, is this rising up where people are becoming more conscious without even having to hear the details of what's going on.
Yeah, thanks very much for that, Claire.
So, hi Claire, it's Roger here. I wanted to kind of build on a great deal of what you said, really, but I'm going to try and distill it down into one question. I'd like to hear your views about the notion of bearing witness. I kind of wonder whether vegans are creating their own dystopia here, in the sense that there's also a generational issue here, you know, like, you know, a few of the kind of vegans of longer in the tooth, as it were, have noticed that, you know, the save movement, you know, doesn't save anyone. And I just wonder what you think about what might be the psychological cost of going along to a slaughterhouse, trying to stop these trucks, taking a couple of pictures for 3 minutes, and then essentially waving them into the slaughterhouse. I'm wondering whether you think there's going to... I mean, you know, I know a couple of people who've had to stop doing it because they just find it too traumatic. What do you think?
Yes, I do think a lot of people suffer enormously. And I think there could be even a guilt that comes from vegans that think, I should be doing this. I should be exposing myself to this. I think it definitely has the potential to do that. And I'm in talking to vegans, perhaps who have done it for a long time, they feel they're able to accommodate it more. What is interesting is, you know, does it have an effect, doesn't it? What, obviously social media it does, but I seem to have some information here that because of my general sort of communications training in the wider world, I recently came across information from a general client who was just talking about someone they knew who worked in these industries and was sitting in a board meeting on one of these sort of animal abuse industries, creating food, chicken or meat or something. And they actually said they have regular updates on their board meeting. What disruptions have happened? What vigils have been held? So from another point of view, that's a very good authority sort of thing. Is it having effect on the wider thing? I think there's many roads to get to London. And there's this rising up, I think, that adds to the tipping point we're trying to reach. But from an individual point of view, I think a lot of trauma can happen. A lot of people feel compelled to do it. Is that for good reasons, that they feel they're bearing witness and being there for the animals, giving them some sort of comfort? Or is there a little bit of a blockage within them where they feel guilty if they don't do this? And in fact, they are self-harming themselves. So I think there's many ways to look at it. But I think from a bigger perspective, this is getting discussed in board meetings where obviously if disruptions happen and they keep happening, at least it's getting on the table.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. And also, I think that I think for me, it's something to do with frequency. I understand the save movement. I understand the idea. And I understand the idea of getting onto social media, although I do kind of fear that it's only just being passed around within the vegan bubble a little bit. But I tend to think that, you know, there's no real need to go all the time, you know, every week or something, because the footage, I mean, I've noticed this, you know, the footage in Ireland or in Britain or United States, Canada or Australia, it's all interchangeable. It all looks the same. You know, there's a lorry, there's slats, you see the other animals, and then that's it. And so I'm not quite sure in terms of the exposure of the, you know, the industry, whether you need to go every week. And I think that might be the thing that's going to kind of upset a few people.
I think you've got a really good point there. And I think perhaps that's given me some ideas when talking to these people to actually raise that if it was done less often and it was in a strategic way to get out there in a more, you know, defined to the ears that need to listen, that would be very important.
Yeah, some people have said that they think it'd be good to be there for that pressure kind of thing, but not necessarily the same people all the time. So obviously that would be the ideal type, right?
Yes. You know, it's deeply traumatizing, I think, when we see animals suffering. When people haven't seen that, I mean, I was traveling down to Melbourne, and I went always drove around the back roads, and a big truck had stopped next to me. And so I got out and I took some footage. The suffering, to see the eyes of those animals, the smell, the heat, the legs that are stuck outside the little vents and whatever. It's deeply traumatizing when you experience that, as no doubt you know. And to hear those screams is very, very powerful. And I see a lot of people definitely traumatized by these things and not knowing what to do, feeling hopeless. And we definitely don't need death activists.
No, see, you know, that goes back to my original point in the sense that it's the fact that although it's called the SAVE movement, no one is saved. I mean, like in my generation, we would go to the farms and we would, like, you know, we would call them inspections or whatever. We would go in en masse, and there's always the possibility, and usually the case, that we liberated a few individuals. And so even though that was very small beer, as it were, at least some were saved. Whereas on this, you've kind of got a situation where people are going week by week and they're not saving anyone. They're just, you know, watching them go into slaughterhouses. And I just fear that that's really kind of bad for their mental health, you know.
No, I think you've got a good point there, Roger.
Claire, I'd like to thank you very much for spending your time with us today. I'd also like to wish you all the very best at VegFest, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for everything that you're doing on behalf of both humans and other animals. Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And thank you to you both for, raising the bar on this and moving us to a more humane and kinder world.
Absolutely. And
no member of the animal kingdom nurses past maturity. No member of the animal kingdom ever did a thing to me. So I don't eat red meat or white meat.